You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman, and our producer, Marshall James.
What's up, everybody? We're here. We're back. It's an exciting day. There's so many things happening in the world today.
I was on 7 airplanes this week in 2 days.
Just 7?
That's more than you, but like twice as much.
I think I was on 5. Double connectings and then a flight back.
So two more.
Yeah, good for you. Yeah. Good for you. Yeah.
Did you fly? We get it. You guys fly.
Did you fly into Chicago at landing at 2 and then leave at 5?
Well, I was with you on the flight into Chicago. So, all right, let's move on.
Today we're talking about magic.
Yeah, this is the Masters of Modern podcast. We talk modern on this show. Magic.
Yeah. Today we're talking about mostly things to do with the mulligan rule. That's like kind of the overarching subject. So for people that don't know, not a pro tour, the Mythic Championship, London, which is a modern one, super exciting. They are testing out, they're pressure testing a new mulligan rule that they've come up with where, and we'll get into that in a second. The other thing we're probably going to go over is there was a ban and restriction announcement. Nothing happened, but people wanted something to happen, and we're going to discuss the different opinions we have on that subject matter. And last but not least, we'll be talking about decks that, on that subject matter, people have thought should have been banned that weren't. And
yeah, decks that like at one point in time were the most oppressive deck that everybody's like, oh, this is the best deck, modern solved, you have to ban a card. And then 3 or 4 months pass and like nothing happened and it was fine. Yeah, that seems like a ton of cool stuff to talk about today. So without further ado, we're going to run the pre-roll ad card. Go. What's up, guys? Masters of Modern here. I'm Ben Bateman.
I'm Alex Kessler.
And we've got a couple quick shout-outs for you guys that we wanted to remind you of on this episode. The first one is Twitter. At the MMCast, we've had a Twitter for years. It's a great place to interact with us. We post exclusive images of our brand new spoiler cards, all kinds of cool stuff. Check it out, at the MMCast. It is a great way to support the show. Kess, where can the folks find you personally?
I'm at Kess Wiley.
You guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media. The second thing is we have a YouTube. You may be watching this right now, honestly. You might be listening to it. But one of the big pushes for us in 2019 is to build this YouTube channel. We want to get more eyes, more ears, bigger guests, better episodes, higher production quality. We even hired a producer right now, so you might even see the camera angles changing. Subscribe, like, comment. It's going really well so far. And honestly, if you guys support it, even if you're an audio listener already, it's a huge thing you can do to help us grow this. The third thing, and maybe the most important thing for our long-term health, is patreon.com/themmcast. Guys, this year is going to have a ton of cool rewards for you. We really want to make the Patreon feel special, and it's a great way to help us grow. Our ability to hire the producer, to get new gear, to do anything cool in the future is going to be dependent on our ability to actually pay for it. Because right now, Alex and I are just paying out of pocket for the show. You know, we love it, but that's what we're doing.
Well, and the producer will help us kind of make sure we stay on stuff on Patreon, so it'll be a really thriving community.
Yeah. Now, the last thing I want to talk to you guys about is the Command Zone. Jimmy Wong, Josh Lee Kwai, these guys helped us start this thing. Mm-hmm. Collected.company is where you can find their stuff. They're seriously the most professional Magic people in the world, not named Ben and Alex.
Yeah, they make awesome content every week, Commander Focus. They do game nights. They do the Command Zone is obviously the podcast, the sister podcast of the MMCast. Check them out, Collected.company. It's the same place you can find our episodes every week as well.
And the last thing is if you guys want to check out a great community, check out the Facebook group, the Masters of Modern. There's a ton of people in there. It's very interactive. There are constantly threads about new decks, new conversations. It's very active. Check it out. That's Facebook, the official Masters of Modern group. And otherwise, let's get back to the show. Yep.
Thanks, guys.
So we're back, and the big news was, as you mentioned, there were no changes to the ban list.
Yeah.
There was a lot of clamoring that maybe there was something that needed to be banned. I would say probably the card at this point is Faithless Looting.
But so fascinating, because before the Mythic Championship and before KCI was banned, everyone was like, we need to ban Ancient Stories. And even I was probably on that train, though. My point on that is more that Preordained being banned when Ancient Stirrings and Faithless Looting are both legal seems weird, because I think both of those are more powerful spells than Preordained, and it just makes blue worse at cantripping, which seems silly. Now I understand that unbanning Preordained makes Phoenix just that much better, but fine. But after KCI was banned, you know, the main target for Ancient Stirrings kind of goes away. You know, there's war decks, and there's decks that come back, and like, you know, everyone's talking about Dredge and Phoenix, but these war tutor decks are doing really well. These present decks are doing well. Tron still is around, tronning around, and we'll talk about Tron a few times today.
I mean, yeah, you have,
but the best two decks in the format are Faithless Looting decks.
I mean, that the card is also utilized by like the Azusa deck, the Amulet deck.
Yeah, yeah, the Amulet deck.
It's also utilized by when people go back old school and they decide they want to play Lantern. Like,
right.
That card is really good.
I think right now in the format, the top five decks are, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, we don't have a prepared list, so I might be wrong. Phoenix, Dredge, the war decks, war-based tutor decks.
Humans and Shadow?
Humans and the lands. They just use a...
Amulet?
Amulet. An Amulet deck has shown up in every top eight
since KCI
was banned.
Right around.
It's the only deck that has done that that's not Dredge and Phoenix.
You had double Shadow at Magic Fest, I'm pretty sure, in the top eight. So I would say that that's like five and six. Maybe.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, but like Shadow has shown up in one in spades, but not across the board in the same way. It's been surprised. Like, people aren't talking about it, but yeah. Like, if you literally look at all of these events, just...
I think it's fair. Yeah, I mean, those are...
People casting Teleri West are just doing really well out there. Yeah.
That's like that's the top five or six.
I'm trying to remember the
Teleri West is worth so much money now. Really? I used to... Yeah, I think a regular Teleri West is worth like $14 or $15
really?
Now.
I think so.
What's a foil worth?
The fancy foil is not worth much more. The real foil.
The real foil.
The future site foil?
Yeah, yeah.
Probably a lot. Probably like $50. Dope. Because I had like six Teleri Wests at one point that was just like hanging out in a box, like along with all my other future site uncommons. And just
people are doing their like top five favorite cards. Teleri West is like almost made the list. It's
for six. A lot of people?
No, my top.
Top five?
Top five. It's probably number six.
That'd be a fun thing for us to do.
There's a lot of top five things going on. We could do a top five, just like different random subject matters.
On the subject of like top things that I would like to do at some point, you and I talked about this, but like top 100 most powerful Magic cards of all time is a conversation because we play Highlander. And
sure.
So like I was trying to figure out online like what powerful cards I don't play in my wheel. So I was looking up like top 100 most powerful cards. And I was like, man, there's like some top 50, top 25s. There's no like recent top 100 comprehensive list online that I could find.
Where are the people to do it?
I think so. I think we should do that.
I will add it to the list. Okay. Also, pack foil Teleri West is worth $45 according to eBay and Card King.
So I like foiled out that Geist of St. Traft EDH deck like almost 6 years ago now. And
I think you've made a lot of money.
Yeah, like one of the best investments I've ever made. Like every single card in it is just like there's some big misses because there's some like, oh, this new card in Standard is really cool, like a Dig Through Time, and I'm like, it needs to be in this deck. And foils are $40. I'm just gonna buy it now, and those aren't worth that much.
Foils
but like
$9.
There's some cards in there that are just like,
yeah.
And I like some of them. I even realized like Thawing Glacier is on the reserve list. I didn't know Thawing Glacier is on the reserve list, and there's only like one foil that could ever exist of it. So it's like,
yeah,
just upside.
Geist of St. Traft is interesting because he has like three or four different foil printings. Yeah. Which one is your commander?
The original, pack foil.
OG. Because was...
I have the From the Vault, double sided Angel Demon foil Angel token, which is also impossible to find.
Yeah,
it's not as special now that we've now gotten like three foil Angel printing tokens. But like, there was a while where it was like one of two foil tokens. Period. In Merit Liege.
So funny.
Moving on with what we're talking about because yeah, none of this is modern related. And you were like, yeah, we're gonna have time.
We are
like
gonna have
2 weeks since we've talked about Magic.
Yeah,
that's not true.
So I mean, I think Stirrings was the card, and it seems like right now the more violent offender is Faithless Looting.
Well, yeah, because everyone's looking at Dredge being the best. And Phoenix being the best two decks in the format and seeing like, hey, this is a problem. Like, you know, Faithless Looting is really good. Now, I think banning Faithless Looting would be a big mistake. I think that someone was writing an article of like, if Dredge is actually a problem, because I think Phoenix being good is a great thing. Like I tweeted this the other day, but all of these people have been begging for Splinter Twin to come back so that blue-red, like, tempo control combo decks can be good again, and then it happens, and the whole world immediately is like, ban it. And I'm like, wait.
I think one thing to clarify, because
what happens sometimes now is we'll get tweets or comments on the YouTube from people who are like, I'm just getting into modern for the first time. I've just found your show. I'm really excited. You know, whatever. Thanks for the content, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think there are things to point out. Like, why is Faithless Looting so good? I mean, sure. And I think the idea there is that Faithless Looting, you know, one red sorcery, draw two, discard two, and then it has flashback. It's designed to be card disadvantage, but it's card selection. That's what that card is, right? You don't draw a card. You get both sides of it. You get a lot of card selection. But because Modern's card pool is so deep, your graveyard becomes an extension of your hand, which is why dumping a Phoenix or something like Dredge, utilizing Dredge triggers.
It's very easy to make that card into one mana, draw two cards.
With flashback, draw two cards.
With
two
flashback
more cards.
For three mana, draw two cards.
That's how it functions in Modern.
And in Dredge,
right?
It's even better because for those who don't know how Dredge works, there is a mechanic called Dredge. It was the Golgari mechanic from original Ravnica. And basically, there's a number. And instead of, if that card with that number and Dredge next to it is in your graveyard, instead of drawing a card, you can instead put that card into your hand and then mill or put that many cards from that number into your graveyard. And so if you have two Stinkweed Imps, which is the highest Dredge number card legal in Modern, in your graveyard, and you Faithless Looting, instead of drawing two cards for one red mana, it's draw 10 cards for one red mana, because all of those cards go into your graveyard. And then, because Dredge works the way it does, there's Narc Amoebas and other cards that you get to cast for free, because when you mill them from your deck into your graveyard, you get to cast them for free. And actually, what I was going to say is, of the two decks, Dredge is the one that Wizards, like, Dredge is kind of the second to Storm as least favorite thing that you can do in Magic to Wizards' perspective. They like you can play out of the graveyard, but they don't like the way that Dredge isn't Magic. It plays differently.
Right.
Reason I just kind of stated. And so it's the one that, like, is most likely to be targeted in the same way that KCI was if Dredge consistently does as well as it's doing right now. And there's two cards I think people were pointing out that were actually a problem, and it's not Faithless Looting. Because, like, Cathartic Reunion is better in Dredge than Faithless Looting is.
Cathartic Reunion is insane.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
And so, but, you know, there's an amalgamation of those cards that do that, but really looking at Conflagrate or the more problematic card, which is the new one that I am forgetting what it is called.
And Creeping Chill?
Yes, Creeping Chill. Yeah. Where those are the two cards that let kind of Dredge just, like, burn your opponent out and don't even have to make them attack. You can't block what they're doing. They're just like, I'm going to kill you.
I lost a Conflagrate against Dredge opponents in LA a couple weekends ago a lot. Mm-hmm. And I was shocked at just, like, how good it was. I own a bunch of Conflagrates. I remember the card coming out. I've seen them play it in Dredge before. Creeping Chill was annoying, and it made it – it wasn't very fun to lose to.
Sure.
But – Conflagrate was like, wow, the inevitability here is unbeatable. Like,
right. And the problem with it is like, and if you get rid of Conflagrate, Loam also becomes somewhat worse because the lands you're getting back from your graveyard just become dead cards in your hand. They're not like discard things to Conflagrate someone out of the game. So like the deck becomes a lot fairer, and I feel like that's the card to one of the two cards to target out of the deck. Going after Faithless Looting is kind of the same as going after Stirring. So many decks are held together by that card. And this is the other point, and kind of the point of this episode. Neither of these decks are that good yet. Like, we're like a month out of the banning of KCI. The metagame is shifting. Like, literally this time 2 years ago, every single person on the planet was like, oh, Death Shadow needs to be banned. The card Death Shadow or what's the cycle guy?
Yeah, Street Wraith.
Street Wraith needs to go, or, like, the Tutor.
Yeah.
Uvenwald.
Oh, Traverse.
Traverse, Uvenwald needs to go, like...
Traverse
cards.
Even see play anymore?
No. I mean, it was Jund Shadow at that point.
Yeah.
The Modern is riddled with a history of decks like this where people get so freaked out by the dominance of a deck for a period of time. And what it really is that, and I think the reason this happens is that Modern is such an expensive format to get into that you commit to your deck and you learn how to play your deck and you get excited about your deck. If you have a bad matchup with the best deck at that time and you play against it more than you would like to, and you don't have the money or the time to go build another deck, you start to feel like this format's not fun for me anymore because my local FNM, I can't, like, I'm not winning. Decks.
Especially when the new best deck is inexpensive or, at a bare minimum, the cards that make it expensive were parts of other decks that people already had. So, like, that's kind of the point with this Phoenix deck is it's really easy to build this deck because the main expensive card in it is Phoenix.
Yeah.
And the mana base.
But, like, there's thousands of twin players out there that have just been like, I have every blue-red card that you could ever need, but I don't have a deck to play them in. And that's why they wanted Splinter Twin back, is like, I want to play my blue-red deck, and now Phoenix shows up, and it's like, oh.
It's also fascinating, like, just really good. On a side note, like, you and I were playing...
Called it? called it? Is the side note that I called how good Phoenix is?
the Decked app we've talked about on here before is awesome. And Alex on an airplane, and Alex and I on an airplane yesterday were playing Magic off of the Decked app.
It was one of the best. We were sitting in. We both got upgraded to first class. We were in the front row bulkhead in first class, and we were just like playing Decked, and like
it was like, so what do you? It was like, so what do you have in play? He's like, I've got a Lenore Wastes, a tapped Overgrown Tomb, and a Grove of the Burn Willows. And
what
I'm
is
like,
this?
So Decked is an app that is like a just. It's like a it's tapped.net, but on a phone. So you can build decks on it. It's a whole deck database, and
it has like a shuffle function, life counter. You can
goldfish on it too. It has a goldfish function, so you can draw a card of seven. You can like, and then it has like in play. In
so you were goldfishing against each other.
We were literally playing games. Yeah, but you have to remember what was in play. That was sweet. Like one challenge.
But my point was that the version of the deck we were playing 100 card format. We've talked about on here before, and I tried to build a blue red spells deck because I enjoyed playing Phoenix so much, and I was shocked. Going back to the beginning of Magic, I mean, literally getting access to all the banned cantrips, getting access to every good burn spell, all the stuff that's not modern, trying to build a deck that was as good as Modern Phoenix with 100 card singleton, not even close. The redundancy in Modern is so high. It's so powerful. I was seriously shocked. Like, getting access to Legacy cards, Force of Will and Daze and Brainstorm, and like just the fact that it's one copy out of 100 versus the four ofs in Modern. Modern's an incredibly powerful format. It's crazy. I think people think about like Vintage and Legacy as though somehow the card quality is so much higher. It's not. It's like
there's like we were talking about this before because Modern Horizons is obviously coming up and talking about what cards can be printed in a Modern Horizons, and I think the big question mark on the wall, and we're gonna have a whole episode about Modern Horizons, so I don't want to get too into it here. But the big question mark on the wall is Force Will, right? Like that's the like a lot of people think it's going to be counterspell. I'm on the consideration that there will be two good counterspells in this set, and one of them is going to be rare. One of them, like my bet are on counterspell and Flusterstorm. If I had to like put money down today,
seems strong.
I think like Force of Will is the other one, and Force of Will is Wizards making a statement. It's like this is like, and that's a big play. That's like putting Jace in whatever, and then having it be unbanned the day after. Like it's a similar kind of moment, and. What are the three defining cards of Legacy? Or, like, it is one of those. It's Wasteland, Brainstorm, and
Force of Will.
And does Wizards... Is Force of Will a card that makes Modern too much like Legacy? Or does it still keep it separate? My point was I don't think it does. I think Force of Will is the least defining of the three defining cards of Legacy in the sense that, like, yeah. But, yeah, we can move on.
Yeah, I think and I honestly think we've talked about this before, and when we get to the Modern Horizons episode, we'll talk about it a bit more, but... I don't actually think that playing a Force of Will in your Modern deck very often is going to make your deck better. I think it's actually going to make your deck worse in a lot of cases.
I think it makes cards like Jason Teferi much better. Like the ability to turn your 4 or 5 drop that's bad in matchups, like Dredge, into a counterspell is like...
Maybe. I think card disadvantage is definitely not something you want to be doing yourself in Modern if you can avoid it, so... Yeah.
Well, I think Brainstorm not being there is like Brainstorm is a much more defining card, but we can... That's, again, Modern Horizons episode.
Yeah.
Coming to you in an episode near you.
So with no ban list changes,
near you.
With no ban list,
it's always
changes,
as near as your smartphone.
That's true.
With no ban list changes, as we kind of continue down the road of decks that should have had a card ban, maybe needed to but never did.
Well, before I do want to make kind of the point that like right now we're in a moment where Wizards is also not going to be making any changes to the format until after Modern Horizons comes out. Because, like, maybe after the Pro Tour, like, what could happen is Pro Tour happens, the Mulligan Rules is mostly fine, but Dredge is too good with it. And we're going to go over a little bit later that why Dredge could be much better with this new Mulligan Rule. And they need to get rid of a card of it. Maybe it's Faithless Looting. Maybe Faithless Looting with this new Mulligan Rule is too powerful. But I don't think they're going to ban cards before the Mythic Championship, seeing that the point of this Mythic Championship is a pressure test. Like the reason this is happening is to do a... figure out if this rule works, and that doesn't work if you change what the metagame was beforehand. They need all of the data they've had since KCI was banned to compare it to the Mythic Championship to see how the Mulligan rule affects the format, and then they'll make decisions. So nothing's going to happen until after that, and we'll see.
Yeah, and so we'll have a kind of a whole conversation about the Mulligan rule in just a second, and that's the thing we're going to do today. But I do want to talk a little bit about what you mentioned in the pre-roll, which was... decks that people have thought needed to be banned that never did. So we talked about Death Shadow. That's the first and best example. And I remember when Shadow broke out originally, we had Corey on the show. And it was Shadow was just becoming the deck, and he told us on the show, you know, I think Death Shadow has been a thing you could have been playing the whole time. I think it's a legacy level deck. People are just discovering it now.
Well,
I think
it was,
it's
like
just,
every card in it was legal. Like, though it came out because they banned Gitaxian Probe, and so the deck stopped being like a
the previous Double Strike, not Double Strike.
Before they banned Gitaxian
Teamer Battle Rage version.
Death Shadow was more of a like weird. I like lower my life total and then give my guy Double Strike.
There was aggro a kill. There was a Kiln Fiend version.
Yeah,
people
it was more
were
like
playing
Zoo than anything. And then when they got rid of it, they're like, oh no, this is just a Tarmogoyf level power level card. Because
yeah, you just
format.
Play you just play Angler and Shadow and a ton of Disruption and you're fine.
Yeah, fetches and Thought Seizes.
Like, yeah,
the best interaction in the format makes you pay life.
But actually, at that point, they hadn't even gotten to Snapcaster in the blue version, Stubborn
sure.
Denial.
Yeah.
This was still the Traverse version. You were playing green, so you could play Tarmogoyf, and the green could get you extra copies of Shadow off your Traverse, mm-hmm. and Mishra's Bauble, and Street Wraith, and all that stuff. We played that deck
for 6 months, basically, that year. Death Shadow was what Phoenix is now. It was the interactive deck that was number one, played a big tempo game. Everyone thought, like, a card needs to get banned. Gitaxian Probe just got banned, so everyone's looking at Street Wraith, as I mentioned before.
Yep.
Being like, oh, this is another free draw card spell. People were looking at, you know, Death Shadow itself. People
Traverse.
Were looking at Traverse. You know, there's different options out of the deck. And then it went into the Grixis.
People were talking, some people talking about Mishra's Bauble.
Yes. Yeah. Mishra's Bauble needs to be banned because it's too, like, easy to get Delirium off of it. And 6 months later, Death Shadow is a decent part of the format.
Became,
if you had a Death Shadow deck
became,
right now, you'd be doing good, but it's like a tier two regularly.
It became, things happened. It became Grixis.
Mm-hmm.
They stopped playing Tarmogoyf. Tarmogoyf started dropping in price like crazy.
Isn't like, yeah, $50 right now.
Less than 50
been.
Bucks.
Yeah.
They stopped playing Traverse. They don't play that card at all anymore.
Well,
I've
they
seen,
dropped green, so.
I've seen four color versions that still play Traverse, but like in the primary version of the deck that you'll play at a GP, they don't play it. Mm-hmm. And then it just became Grixis, and now the Grixis Shadow deck is a really good deck, but mm-hmm. it feels like a lot of decks in Modern, it's powerful and cohesive, and you can get run over by it, but you
right.
also can just beat it.
Like, when they printed cards, like, you know, Mardu got better, and that deck didn't really want to play with those same cards. Grixis Control straight up started doing really well, pretty much off the back of Corey. You had Humans showed up, and Humans was a medium matchup. You had a lot of, Dredge got better again because they printed Creeping Chill. Like, there's just consistently new in decks that went around. Death Shadow got better and better in the format.
Speaking of Humans, that's another one.
Yeah.
Now, Humans is probably the most recent prior to Phoenix that mm-hmm. was in this category of months and months of really dominant play, tons of discussion, showing up in top eights constantly.
Well, and this is something that also happens after every Mythic Championship or Pro Tour is pros like or get a format to a position, they break it, and then the whole community starts just playing the decks that the pros were playing with. That's one of the reasons Wizards kind of canceled the Modern Pro Tour for a while to begin with. But what we've learned is everyone plays that deck, but then the entire metagame just learns, like, oh, the way you beat Death Shadow is Lantern Control, or the way you beat
right.
Humans is you go around them, or you go bigger than them, or you just play Teferi. Like, there's different ways, and Terminus, you know, there's different ways to go around these cards, and, like, it takes a while to learn. Like, you have to get good at it.
Right.
You, like, it's not because you're like, oh, there's an answer. Because if there was an answer that's easy, then that deck wouldn't be good.
Right. It's like learning how to properly play blue-white control to negotiate the board state and effectively use a Terminus is not something that you just, like, yeah, I'll just stop playing Toronto. Let's play blue-white. It'll be fine.
Well, yeah. Well, like with that, you know, you had Humans was doing really well, and then people started playing Jace, and Jace wasn't by himself good enough. And Bloodbraid Elf was, like, right out the gates a much more explosive card. And then Teferi got printed, and then they started playing Teferi over Jace. And they were like, oh, we should just play both of these in Terminus. And, like,
most of the blue-white control decks play a combination of five copies, right?
I think it's like, 5 to 6. It's like there's
it's like
a,
two and three. Usually,
yeah,
like, two Teferi, three Jace. Yeah. Teferi's so good.
Yeah.
Such a good magic
I've seen
card.
Four Jace, two Teferi. I've seen three. I've seen eight. That seems wrong.
last night I was looking through Dominaria, Rare and Mythic, to see, like, are there any, like, dumb rares that I just, like, have copies of from draft that I didn't realize were worth money? And I was, like, scrolling through prices, and it's like 326, 454. I was like, yeah, of course. This is, like, an older, and it's like Teferi 55. I was,
you,
like,
saw the Teferi I folded, right? Did I?
You have that.
No, but I showed it.
Oh, it might be in a. No, it's you. I mean, I've seen it.
Yeah, you know. That I like. Okay, so I opened my pack foil from that pre-release was Teferi, and which is why I like, yeah, it's good. But I had it as a commander for a Brawl deck, and I just, like, kind of forgot I had this Brawl deck, and so then I, like, grabbed that deck, took the deck out because I needed the deck box or something else, and put a commander deck into it, which is a much thicker deck, and the Teferi got left in there because the sleeve was the same color as the box inside and got folded in half. So that was $90 just wafting. And the nice thing, I have the command. It's just now a Geist. Like, it's a commander. It's now a commander foil.
I had that happen to me with the Future Sight Apocrysite.
That's less.
Ben, how will your bank account ever recover?
I mean, I love Apocrysite, so.
Now every time I see the Teferi promo, I almost just buy it just to, like, replace it in my heart. Because I'm just like.
I remember when you showed it to me, I was like, I'll take that for $5.
Someone was, like, offering $5. Like, what can I get it from you on Twitter? I was like.
It's way more worth having it and the story than to just, like, sell it for $5.
Yeah, like, $5 is not worth it still.
So, but
I sell for 50.
I mean, it is a legally printed Magic card, so it is usable in any Magic tournament. You may just have to get a judge-issued proxy for it.
Oh, really?
Any Magic card that has been printed by Wizards of the Coast, regardless of its condition, you may present your deck, your card, to a judge and say, hey, I think this card might be considered damaged, and the judge can issue you an official proxy. They'll just create a proxy on a basic land. They'll sign the judge's name. And you just have to keep the card with your deck so that if your opponent wants to see the card, you can present it to them.
I did not know that.
Interesting.
It's the thing because I think they realize that there are, especially when it gets to like Vintage and Legacy, there are people who have cards that there will never be another printings of them. And like, you know, if you have an arted up Black Lotus, but the ink on the art makes it a slightly thicker, you know, you don't want to be like out being able to play the card.
Right.
Yeah. So
not to mention like, I think with double face cards and with, the Kess issue we were talking about before, before the record of the episode, but so Kess Descendant Mage, best card in Magic, is at Loam. Life of Loam is the best card in Magic.
Is only available in foil,
and the foils can warp, and so it's considered a marked card in your deck. And so with cards that are only available in foil, with double face cards, with damaged cards that are old and reserve list cards, so there's not really a convenient way to force a person financially to be able to get those, having a rule to be able to get around that makes a lot of sense.
As long as you have the card, a judge can issue a judge issue.
So I still have four Teferis. They're not all foil. I have just four of them. if need be for a tournament.
So Humans was the deck, and people were trying to figure out how to beat the deck, and there was a lot of discussion about Humans for a long time. Mm-hmm. Again, a lot of the time these decks, unless they're combo decks, they tend to be kind of disruptive creature decks like sure. that's a pretty common theme.
And the issue with Humans was always like, what do you ban out of that deck? And one of the issues, like, the cards that are most obvious to ban are not the most important cards of the deck. Like we talked about, what's the
Ancient Ziggurat was the one that you and I brought up a lot. That was like the most logical if you were going to try to kill a card in that deck, because like the other lands are good for other creature decks, but Ancient Ziggurat is the most like, it's just 12 five-color lands, but that's not going to make the deck that much worse.
Right.
They've already adjusted their mana base.
I mean, like, there was talks of, what's the Mana War?
Reflector Mage.
Reflector Mage, and that was mostly not because that card's that important to the deck, but because it was banned in Standard, then it's like,
Freebooter.
There's a history behind it. Freebooter and Meddling Mage, but, like, that looks dumb on a
list.
A ban list. If I, was going through the modern ban list and I saw Freebooter, I'd be like, this seems...
Yeah.
Medium.
I mean, if you were to ban Noble Hierarch, I guess it would affect the deck.
Which is just like bad for the format in general. And
yeah, Hierarch's
like
super sweet.
Like,
yeah.
I think Noble Hierarch, if 99% of the time, if you're playing a Noble Hierarch in Modern, you're playing a deck that I think should deserve to exist.
Well, so, and in the end, Humans is really good. People are still playing it, but it's not the best deck. It's not even one of the two best decks. Mm-hmm. It's still playable. It's still good. It'll still win tournaments. But
well, there's a moment that Spirits became better than Humans just because the metagame shifted and they got a bunch of new cards out of M19. Like,
yeah,
it's definitely a situation where just the format needed to get better at kind of hating it out. And like, and it's good that Wizards didn't react as strongly as the internet hoped they would have.
Yeah, it was definitely a moment in time. I guess that was probably about a year ago or so, mm-hmm. a little less than a year. Yeah, probably like a year ago.
It was. So, in timeline, the last time this happened was Humans. The time before that was Death Shadow, the year before that.
And currently it's Phoenix.
Currently it's Phoenix and Dredge. Dredge has been, like, Dredge is the storm of Modern in some ways.
Yeah,
in the sense that, like, I can see them banning a card out of Dredge. I don't think it should be Faithless Looting. It would be really sad if it was Faithless Looting. Faithless Looting does a lot of cool things for other decks. I like that Phoenix is a good deck. We mentioned kind of what to do there, and Dredge has already had cards banned out of it. You know, there's multiple cards on the ban list all specifically banned because Dredge is a deck list. Golgari Grave Troll, banned. You have, what's the animate spell, reanimation spell?
Dread Return,
banned. Like, these are cards that, you know, Wizards doesn't want Dredge to be too good in the format, and they'll probably ban it. Like, Storm has, like, six cards on the ban list. So, like, it's the same kind of deal.
So, if currently it's Dredge and Phoenix, and that those are both kind of fresh. Dredge is not that fresh. Phoenix is very fresh. Mm-hmm. If you go back to, like, the old school decks that, like, people have been saying this about for years, the
Tron
two
is the most one that comes to mind.
And Affinity.
Yeah.
Tron and Affinity.
So, Mox Opal is more out of Affinity, because I don't think anyone's ever been like, man, Affinity is too strong.
Years ago, they were. That was
sure.
And like, I would say Affinity is almost the earliest version of the conversation we're having in modern, because there was a year or two there where Affinity was like, your game win percentage in match one was like, or in game one was like 74% or something like that. And like, you would just like roll people over, and people hated that. I hated playing against Affinity.
Sure.
Could not stand it.
I'm surprised people haven't gone back to more, because like, people are like really onto the
Hardened Scales.
Hardened Scales lists. I feel like those are worse than the regular lists, and just people are like so hot on the new tech, but like
it's actually a totally different deck is the interesting part.
Yeah.
It plays completely differently. But I think
but if it, like Affinity now gets brought up as a card that needs to be banned more because Mox Opal is randomly in the KCI war decks, like it was in Lantern, like it just shows up in other deck lists that seems like this is maybe the slightly too powerful of a card.
Do you have Opals? I have no Opals, and I need to get one.
I might have three versus four, but
I need to get an Opal for the sake of, you know, no proxies.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I don't want to buy one because, like, I'm still afraid of the possibility.
I have no Opals, and I want it to be banned because I think that card needs to be banned, and I don't want to have to acquire any Opals.
I think it's a what's it called type of card. I think a deck would have to, like, a Cheerios style deck is what would get it banned. If, like, Lantern didn't get it banned, and KCI didn't get it banned, and Affinity didn't get it banned, like, Wizards has kind of made the point that the staples of the format, they don't want to get rid of. They'll more likely to get rid of, like, the niche cards from decks that seem to be problematic for other reasons. KCI being the best example. Like, they got rid of that card because it was weird for the rules more than anything. Like,
right.
It was, and so, if that's not what gets Mox Opal banned, same as Ancient Stirrings, I think, is, like, safe. This is why I want Preordain unbanned, is, like, fine, let Blue have one of the, like, be able to compete with Faithless Looting and Ancient Stirrings.
So then on the other side of it, is if we're talking Tron, because we talked Stirrings for a second, Tron has had, probably four or five significant iterations over the years. There was, like,
once that card's banned out of it, I mean, I have Ugin was in it.
There's Mono Green Tron, there was Green Red Tron, there's Eldrazi Tron. Has there been another, like, really sick? There was, like, Blue-White Tron early on.
So the first ever was Green-Red. Green-Red is kind of where it started. Then, first ever,
like, top-level tournament deck was Green-Red. Because, like, people played it.
First-level top tournament deck was Locust
Lands. Oh, sure. The very first Pro Tour.
So the very first Pro Tour, and for the, months after that, the Locust Lands were legal. And those are basically just the Tron Lands on speed, where it's they
trigger each other.
When it enters in play, you make mana equal to how many Locust Lands you have, so they all trigger each other.
I'm trying.
And the other
Glimmer,
ones gain you
Glimmer
life.
Post?
Glimmer Post and Cloud Post.
Yeah.
And Cloud Post and Vesuva, that's right.
And Glimmer Post is the one that's banned.
And they would play all 12, and so you could get a million mana
and Emrakul,
Primeval
Titan, and Karn, and all the things that Tron.
Cloud Post is the one banned.
Cloud Post, yeah.
Cloud Post was the first one? Because Glimmer gains you life.
Gains you life. Cloud Post comes into play tap, but scales with the number of posts you have.
Right. So that then gets banned. So we're talking about cards that don't need to get banned, and then there's going to be bannings that happen this. Then red-green becomes just kind of the dominant one. Now, during that time, the other major version of it was blue. So mono-green didn't show up actually really until pretty recently.
And the green-black versions that are playing Thoughtseize and
relatively
push
recent.
In the board.
Like, forever was like really those two. Then people started splashing white. I know Josh Kim had a green-white one for a long time. And that one's still kind of around. And then mono-green became more of the firm one. Then the Eldrazi got printed. And then there's like 18 different ones.
And Eldrazi Tron played as largely a different deck. And Eldrazi Tron in a lot of ways.
Deck entirely.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, Eldrazi Tron I like more as a deck. It's way less of a like big dumb thing that smash deck. Like Eldrazi Tron is like you can just play like a Ballista on turn two. Like that's a thing that
I would
deck
much
does.
Rather Tron as it exists now be legal than Eldrazi Winter Eldrazi Tron.
Yeah, that was terrible. but again, and I think the conversation with Tron for a while, you know, it did have a card banned, and then it was, do we need to ban Stirrings or do we not need to ban Stirrings? And that's basically the conversation with Tron. I don't think there's another card in Tron.
Map. I could see getting rid of Map.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
If Tron is itself a problem and Ancient Stirrings isn't the problem, or they want to keep, like, the thing that one of the format defining cards, the same way you would never ban brainstorm in Legacy, then Map is the card I think you would get rid of.
Or Tower, if you want to really kill it.
Well, if you just want to kill it, yes, Tower. But I don't think Wizards wants to do that. There are too many decks out, people that have that deck out there that it would just basically.
And I also don't mind
a format.
Like, I don't mind when somebody hits. Like, I don't mind when somebody hits Tron off of, like, working for it. Like, if they scrying or they map to hit their third piece. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, I wish I had a piece of interaction usually at that point, but, like, it, you have to work for it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a, you're spending cards to get your deck to that point, and it's, like, a fun cat and mouse game in game two, I've always found with them, like, paying attention to how close they are to Tron and, like, how, what's going to happen? What's the worst thing they could play if they hit Tron the next turn? It's like, okay, can I beat Nugan here? Because if I can't beat Nugan, I'm just going to lose.
Mm-hmm. Plus, Tron is one of those decks that they've now been able to print several very effective sideboard pieces mm-hmm. between Blood Moon and Damping Sphere and Ceremonious yeah. Rejection, which you can play multiples of all of those, and they're good against Tron, but also happen to be good against.
Like Lavinia got printed. Yeah, like, there's like random other like just medium good hate cards.
Hoser cards. Yeah. Yeah, yeah,
and like
that's what makes modern. And that's what makes modern interesting is those cards existing.
Right.
You know. Yeah. Really, that's like the best thing in the world is when a deck is powerful, but a good player has the right cards in their sideboard for games two and game three mm-hmm. to like properly negotiate. Like that is what makes Modern a great format.
Well, I think this is actually a good time maybe to transition into the conversation about the Mulligan Rule, because I want to discuss how the Mulligan Rule affects Tron more than anything. So
yeah, and I just really quickly before we do that, just because we're like 2 months now into this new system with Marshall as a producer, and I believe we mentioned this probably in the role earlier, but we have a Patreon, guys, patreon.com/themcast. We are going to be rebranding it and introducing some new stuff very soon. We're excited about that. Like, we definitely want to make it bigger and more interactive and more community for you guys. But if you want to help us continue to do the show, please patreon.com/themcast. It's the literal most important thing for our ability to continue to do the show for you guys and expand it and make it bigger and better. So let's get into the segment.
Cool. So for those who don't know, the way the new Mulligan Rule works is you draw 7 cards. I don't like this hand. It's all lands. Then you shuffle your hand back into your deck. You then draw another 7 cards. And you're like, oh, well, I don't like this hand either. You shuffle that in. Now, this is the third time you do it. You draw 7 cards. So you keep drawing 7 cards. And then once you're like, oh, I like enough of the cards in this hand that I want to keep it, you then equal to how many times you've now mulliganed. So in this example, I've now done it twice. So I would take 2 cards of my choice from the hand, put onto the bottom of the deck, and I'll get to keep that hand of 5. Small intricate things, so something like Serum Powder, where you then can do shenanigans with it that we'll go over later, but you would wait until after you have those 5, and then you would use Serum Powder. So
right.
There's some intricate rules to it, but basically the idea is every time you mulligan, you drop the 7 cards, and then once you decide you are done mulliganing, you then equal to how many times you've mulliganed, get rid of, basically discard that many cards onto the bottom of your deck.
So it's a... There's a lot of conversation that has happened about this. There's a lot of articles that have been written. Alex and I have talked about it a ton off camera. Obviously, on the front end, the thing that is the most significant is if you have really powerful sideboard cards or cards that you absolutely want in your opening hand, that's where this is going to favor you. That's like the point. Like the people who are talking about this as being a benefit, that's what they're focusing on.
So I think that's tier 2. Like, I think there's tiers of decks that get better with this. Obviously, the sideboard game is important, but that only really starts mattering on game 2, being able to get powerful sideboard cards. So, like,
it's
beneficial and it's important, but winning a game 1 is still going to be a big deal. And decks that both either want specific cards that they're tutoring for, basically, or are looking to, like, you know, Dredge doesn't want a specific card. The reason Dredge is getting better with this Mulligan Rule is because it now can make sure that Narcomoeba and Creeping Chill are never going to be in its opening hand.
Right.
And it allows decks like Lantern to be like, oh, I just want to get to 2 lands and the bridge, and now I can't lose.
Right.
So, like, the decks that actually get to even more take advantage of, I want a smaller hand size, then I can find a specific card, or almost more at an advantage that people aren't talking towards, because their decks are now get to kind of break that rule open a little bit better.
And this is a little bit, if this plays the way that we expect it to, this is a little bit where the Force of Will in modern conversation actually becomes more relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are able to mulligan down to your bridge on your turn, whatever bridge, like, that's where you're going to want to have that Force of Will, right? That's like, or they're going to mulligan down to their Spirit Guide Chalice hand so they can just shut you out.
Right.
Like, that's where you're going to need the free counterspell. And
Well, so this is the, you know, we have a list of here of tiers, and we're kind of just throwing that list out the window because we're not just talking about all of them, but, and we will get maybe into it specifically. I think the underrated or the under the radar best card out of this new rule is Thoughtseize. Like, if my opponent is a combo deck or control deck and I'm on the play and they mulligan down to four or five to get the one card that they need and I turn one Thoughtseize them, they lose.
Yeah. No, I was thinking that too. I was thinking, like, you know, all the control decks, like, just any single piece of disruption
right.
against a four card hand that has the card they want is so good.
And Jund is a deck that already wants to play in top deck mode. There's a reason that that deck is so good with Liliana the Veil. It's just like every card it's playing is that level of power level. I would maybe go to Junk versus Jund, but like, oh no, I've like Thoughtseize your one card. I'm at four cards. I have three lands in play, or four. I've been able to draw enough lands to play Liliana and to Bloodbraid Elf. Like, how do you beat that hand?
Yeah, but like, and the other crazy thing too is like, so the decision of whether you're going to mulligan aggressively is heavily dependent on whether or not you're on the play or the draw. Yep. Like, you have to, when you know that, it's like, okay, I'm making a totally different decision here. And then the other crazy part about it is like, if you know in game two what your opponent is playing and they've mulliganed down to four, like, it's the whole, like, I don't have to declare my mulligan until you declare your mulligan thing,
sure.
which is, like, usually kind of an afterthought in Tournament Magic, becomes so significant here.
Oh, yeah.
It's such a different experience here than it used to be, where it's, like, you literally, you know, a good Magic player shuffles their deck, they look at their hand, and if they're on the draw, they look at their opponent totally stone-faced. They don't show them any expression. Just like it's general practice to wait to hear what your opponent's going to do before you decide. Now, that becomes such a significant piece of strategy.
Oh, right.
You have to, like, not give any indication of how you feel about your hand until you know what they're doing.
Well, you already should have been doing that, but yes, this makes it, like, the mulliganing process has now become a little minigame. Because there's even the level of, if I'm a Dredge player and you're anyone else.
Yeah.
And I mulligan, and then you mulligan. I'm like, okay, mulligan again, and then you mulligan again. Like, are you on ley line? Am I, like, now trying to make sure that I have, like, cards that I can cast without using my graveyard? Am I mulliganing now? That,
yeah,
like,
right.
Oh, I brought an ancient, or I brought in any graveyard hate card so I can, like, destroy your ley line. So now I'm like, okay, now I need to make sure I find.
This is where I'm trying to tell you. In the game two version of this is so much more significant than the game one version.
No, it's fun. I think that's cool, but I think that, like, does this mulligan rule make your deck better in all modes is more relevant than does this make my sideboard game more interesting? Because I think the other part of it is, yes, I can now find more powerful sideboard cards against you, but you can find your sideboard cards.
Yeah.
And so
it makes everybody's game two and three more interesting,
right.
regardless of what deck you're
the
playing.
The anti sideboard game is going to be hilarious, because people have to do that already in Modern, the meta. Like, they're going to bring in this, so I'm going to do this.
Well, before it was like, okay, because now, like, mulliganing is not good, but, like, the percentage of times I don't want to mulligan is way lower. Going to six is so much less problematic than staying at seven, and so fine.
Yeah.
One thing I do want to bring up that I don't know for sure if this is true, but I believe Scry is gone if this mulligan rule happens.
Scry will be gone, yeah.
So I think that's actually a positive, not because I don't like the Scry rule. I think it's fine. But I think that, you know, I forget who it was. I think it was Ari Lax wrote an article when Scry was brought back for just made evergreen. And his kind of point was like, Scry is one big problem that people don't consider. The more people touch their decks, the more likely they are to cheat. Or the more likely they are to, like, make big mistakes, like accidentally drawing cards or doing something dumb. And so Scry is just an entire layer of, like, I can look at two cards without you noticing that I looked at two cards. Or I can do this. And so it gives less of an opportunity for people to take advantage versus this mulligan rule where, like, the worst case scenario here, I think, is someone discards two cards instead of three cards. And be vigilant on that. I think that's something that will happen is people will mulligan four times but only discard three cards at the end, or shuffle their cards back into their deck instead of putting it on the bottom. And, like, that's which, to be honest, I think it should. I think, like, the major change I would make from this versus what it is now after the Pro Mythic Championship, it's gonna take a while, is it should shuffle and not put it to the bottom.
So, very important question. I'm looking over the outline here, mm-hmm. I'm looking at the different things, the topics that we want to talk about here. With smaller hand sizes guaranteed, states Bridge from Below. True or false, Alex Kessler wrote that as a joke or intentionally? Definitely unintentionally.
Ooh, do they print the 3/1 that you can exile a black card from your graveyard to put into play? Icarid? Do they print Icarid in Modern Horizons?
They probably do.
You think so? You think that's like an easy include?
Yeah.
Does that make Bridge from Below, the actual
Bridge
one,
from Below,
better?
Maybe.
Or playable, even. Now, one of the reasons Bridge is better in Dredge and Legacy is because no one's playing with creatures in Legacy, and Modern is way more creature-heavy, so it's much easier for me to, like, bolt my own creature and wreck you.
Yeah.
But, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the next piece.
What I meant was ensnaring Bridge.
I'm well aware. the next thing on here that I want to talk about is, it says cards that it affects, right? So cards that you want to have in your opening hand that you specifically want to have in your opening hand. So that's stuff like the Ley Lines, the Chancellors, Gemstone Caverns, that new Sphinx.
I think this is the first place everyone's brain went to, right? Like, oh, I have, after my first mulligan, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, all added together. So whatever, like 10, 21 extra cards that I get to look at that I wouldn't have had before to find cards I need. And
right.
That means decks like that just are looking for combos. We were talking about Goryeo's Vengeance decks before this started. Like, that deck literally just needs Faithless Looting, Grizzlebrand, and a land. And
a Goryeo's Vengeance.
A Goryeo's Vengeance. And, like, is really far ahead if it has those four cards.
I think also, the reality of turn one Chalice becomes such a difference than it, like, currently you can turn one Chalice in prison decks. Like, it happens. Mm-hmm. People do it with Gemstone Caverns and Spirit Guide. But, like, people are forgetting that it, when you're playing against the deck that can do that to you, you hope to dodge it. Sometimes it hits you, and then you play around it. But, like, if decks can just start to mulligan down to that, there are some decks.
Spirit Guide Chalice, yeah.
Or Gemstone Caverns, sure. Chalice. There are just going to be decks that just, like, straight up lose game one. They have no chance of winning.
Right.
Decks that play, like, 24 one-drops.
If you're a deck who is, yeah. Well, then this has a whole other layer to the mulligan game of, like, okay, so I'm trying to get Leyline of the Void into play. And I know my opponent is Dredge, and he is playing what's the one green destroy thing?
Nature's Claim.
Do I now try to also get Leyline or Chalice into play on turn one with Simeon Spirit Guide? Am I trying to outmaneuver his outmaneuver of my maneuver?
I mean, yeah, the cat and mouse game, but the reality is when you start to get down to like 3 and 4 and 5 cards, the likelihood of actually having the correct combination of things is low.
Sure. Well, I think Chalice is interesting. I think it's a little less powerful than other combo, like Tron, for instance, is another one. I can mulligan down to just having Tron and
mulligan
just, like,
down to two,
every card I'm
mulligan down right. to two Tron pieces and a
Map
tutor
or a tutor
is going to be something you're able to do in
Tron
almost every
better.
Single game.
I think Tron gets better and worse. I think Tron is kind of a wash more than any other deck because it now is able to get Tron more easily. But the decks that are bad matchups for Tron are the ones most likely to be benefited by this rule change. Glorious Vengeance is the one that I think is the most interesting, or like, because that deck has always been. In fact, that deck has been on the conversation of should this have a card banned out from over it just because it could win on turn one. Like, its power level was like, has a weird moment. It has to get really lucky, but now it's a lot easier to get really lucky.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I think the Ley Lines, you know, that's definitely an interesting one. I think Gemstone Caverns is very, very good. Mm-hmm. I think the ability to start with two lands, like consistently having the ability to start with two lands in play, mm-hmm. there's a lot of decks that's going to just be a house. Mm-hmm. You know, you can catch back up in Modern. There's lots of things you can do that get you card advantage. So, but there's not a lot of things you can do to get to two lands. Like, there's.
So is it going to be better than Mox Opal? I don't know if it is.
Caverns? Maybe. Maybe.
Yeah. Marshall shaking his head no.
Well, because Gemstone Caverns is not an artifact.
Right.
And I think part of Mox Opal's power is that it's a zero cost artifact in a deck that wants to flood the board with artifacts.
Yeah. It's fair.
And so, like, I think it's going to be fine. I think it's way better than it was before. I think that we have. There are decks that will definitely take advantage of it. The Goryeo's Vengeance deck is a good example of that actually as well, because it just having two lands on turn one, that's, you know, any deck that plays Simeon Spirit Guide maybe now plays it. But I don't think it's better than Mox Opal, and I don't know if it's better than Simeon Spirit Guide.
Yeah.
Now Serum Powder, which we talked about in the future, we're now there, is a card that also gets much better and works. So at first we thought it didn't work with the rule. We thought it only worked with your opening hand because
right.
it, like, the way it explains rules doesn't work the way you thought it would. But I do think that it just in general is going to be a stronger card here. Like, this is now the time for it to exist because you get extra mulligans out of this situation.
I'm starting to think about, like, all the things you can do, like, just based on this list. Like, okay, so Chancellor of the Tangle is a card that people have talked about for a long time as a possible in Modern.
I have 36 foils.
Yeah. Foils? You bought foils?
I bought 36 foils and 36 regulars. I think I have 72 copies of it.
And I have a few of them. It's Chancellor of the Tangles is a cycle from New Phyrexia of rares. Each color had one. If you had it in your opening hand, you got to do something. And they're all pretty mediocre. The green one is the best one. I want to say it's a 4/7 reach for like 7 mana. Mm-hmm. And if you have it in your opening hand, you can reveal it and add green to your mana pool in your first main phase. So it's like
there's a Charbelcher deck in Modern that is up to this point has not been playable because the deck was fun when you the way the deck was fun was it worked 1 out of 4 games. That's what you were trying to do, not I'm winning 2 out of 3 games, which is what you need a deck to do in Modern.
Right.
So with this new rule, it could get to I'm now winning 1.5 out of 3 games, so now it becomes a tier 2 deck, 2-3 deck, versus a tier not a deck. But Chancellor of the Tangle is the main card out of that deck with Simeon Spirit Guides and other things. Now, Elvish Spirit Guide, no, they don't print that in the Modern Horizons.
I mean, and then, like, what do you do with your Chancellor of the Tangle once you reveal it? Are you playing, like, some deck like with, like, Nourishing Shoal or something? Like, wants to...
So it's...
Well, that, I'm just thinking of other things you can do. Like, I'm just trying to think of other ways. If you're going to consistently be able to hit 2 mana on turn 1, which it seems like... It does seem like with this new rule, you'll be able to. Between Chance of the Tangle, Simeon Spirit Guide, and Gemstone Caverns, they're now giving you, and this rule, you will have 2 mana on turn 1 in a deck if you want it 100% of the time. So what does that mean?
That's the question. 100% of the time is a strong statement. But
if you have 12 copies in your deck.
Yeah, Charbelcher, I built the deck, and it does not get that. With the new Mulligan rule, it's better, but like even then, it was like, I don't know if it gets you there 100% of the time. That's a strong...
I mean, we're talking about things that you just said. You see 21 more cards.
Sure.
I think it's safe to say if you have 12 copies and what you need is a land, one of those cards, and something to do with it, you'll get it 100%, like maybe like 94% of the time.
Oh, sure. Sorry, I was under 3 mana. Yeah, fine.
Okay, right?
Continue.
Like, that's all I'm saying. I think it's a pretty significant
You can
difference.
Guarantee 2 mana. You can't guarantee the 3 that you would need to really do anything.
So, like, Trinisphere on turn 1 or something?
Right. There's...
Or Belcher?
Yeah. I mean, like, you can do it. I think that... I don't think... As a person who would love this card to be good because I have so many of them and I would just sell them and make money off of it, I don't think Chancellor of the Tangle can ever be that good. I think like the one deck you would do something with it is decks that you want to be able to get to like 4 mana for free without having lands in your deck.
Yeah.
And that type of deck is not great. And if you're going to not want that, then just Simeon Spirit Guide is better 99% of the time, and you don't want 4 terrible 7/4s in your deck that cost 7 mana.
I think thinking about the prison deck, the mono-red prison deck, that plays Desperate Ritual in an attempt to get Blood Moon on turn 2, I think you're going to see that deck get better. I think that deck's going to have a turn 1 Blood Moon most of the time.
Yeah.
That's...
No, the white-red prison decks get better. But, like, once again, they're the decks that have the worst matchups. They get, like, when Dredge is good, that deck is bad.
Right, because Dredge doesn't care.
Because they're like, I have a bunch of three.
I have this mountain and Faithless Looting in my hand. You lose.
Green, you lose. Thank you for playing a Blood Moon on turn 2.
Yeah, it's pretty telling, I think, that, you know, because Faithless Looting is essentially careful study with flashback, right. And a careful study is not legal in Modern. But in a funny way, if we could ban Faithless Looting and swap it for careful study, these Faithless Looting, like some of them, like Phoenix, would still be like, all right, careful study, that's cool. But considering one of the major hate cards against the prolific mana bases in Modern turns everything into mountains, which can still cast Faithless Lootings.
Yes, that is true. I think it's 75%. I think only 25% of Faithless Looting is the flashback side of it. I think 75% of it is the one mana draw.
No,
two
I think, but I think, I but I'm talking about the point that it's red no, instead of
Blood Mooning those decks out. If Blood Mooning them out means that they have to have blue to cast their careful study, it makes
yes. But I think Blood Moon is 5% of the format, if not less. Not like I think on the list of things. That I'm worried about in Modern, and this is a person who I want Blood Moon gone, but not for power level perspective. But
yeah. But I think I was more meaning that Faithless Looting is showing up in a ton of non-blue decks.
Sure.
So if you had to go into, it's funny that like the best card draw spell in Modern is a red card, not a blue card.
Correct.
And
well, this is my complaint about Preordain is Faithless Looting, and I think if you unbanned Preordain, Faithless Looting and Ancient Stirrings are still better than it.
Yeah. Right.
So why is it why is blue the worst?
What if you were to unban Preordain but ban Faithless Looting?
I think that's fine. I think that's possible. I think that the format is worse for not having Faithless Looting in it. I think it lets enough decks do cool stuff that it would be worse. And like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I so want Corey's Vengeance to be good.
Any other comments that we have on the London Mulligan rule?
So we talked about decks that we talked about kind of discard decks. We talked about how Jund gets much better because it's a deck that both can deal with a smaller hand size and has Thoughtseize that destroy these decks. We talked about,
I guess, 8-Rack gets a lot better.
8-Rack gets much better.
I guess 8-Rack becomes becomes a real
like Thoughtseize is a card that people aren't talking about that does get better in this world, to the extent that if Thoughtseize is relatively inexpensive or even Inquisition, not a bad time to pick them up. Emrakul's way better. Like, and that's in the same conversation as Creeping Chill and Narcomoeba Dredge, but like there are a lot of decks out there. And what's the other big artifact creature that your life total can't change?
Blightsteel. Oh, Platinum Imperium.
Platinum Imperium. Both like the deck that's decks that want a card in your deck that you cast a spell that lets you then cheat that card in the deck into play by it being in your deck, and that card is bad when it's in your hand, get a bump. It's not as big as some of these other conversations, but
some people pointed out on, you asked before we started recording to Twitter to get people to respond on the subject today, and some people are talking about that if you're a cascade-based deck planning on cascading into those no casting cost mm-hmm. suspend cards, this gets better because you don't want to see those no casting cost suspend cards in your opening hand, so you can shuffle them all away. But if you're playing a more like As Foretold Electro Dominance version of the deck, then your deck doesn't get better by this, but...
Well, and yeah, you go back and there's...
Like, although I think it gives you more chances to have a...
I think that's the thing,
like Rug, Ancient... Not Ancient Grudge.
Ancient...
Ancestral Visions.
Ancestral Visions.
Yes. I think one of the things that I'm the most excited about for this rule, we're talking about all the high level stuff, all the tier one, mm-hmm. like there's a lot of sweet, super fun brews that I've come up with, that other people have posted online, that people try to, you know, take dailies with, that require you to have synergy between underpowered cards. It's a thing that you try to do all the time, mm-hmm. and it's hard to do. It's especially hard to compete with the really good decks doing that. Whether or not it will make any of those decks highly competitive, I think there's a lot of fringe decks in the wings that are going to be really cool, mm-hmm. that people are going to have a chance to finally play mm-hmm. and feel with some confidence they'll be able to hit. Like, even just like thinking about some of the ones I've sleeved up against you over the years, like, do you remember the Cloud Form deck with like Eater of Days and like Hunted Horror?
Yeah, and, or like, the Cloud Form and Emrakul decks, like those are...
No, that one I never did because I... but.
Sorry, that was... Yeah. People were trying to do that. You were trying to sneak in Hunted Horror instead of...
I was trying to... stuff I could cast on turn two.
Sure.
But also then, like, make into, like, 7-7 flying versions. Decks like that where, like, they're, like, almost there but not quite. Mm-hmm. Having that extra level of consistency means that I'm not thinking I'm going to win a GP with a deck like that, but it might be really fun to take that to an FNM and do well with it.
Well, that's kind of like when I was pointing at Polymorph, and there's an artifact Polymorph that can get Blightsteel into play even. And
Shape anew.
And, like, there are... Tier 4 Shape Anew and Polymorph decks that are just like, I'm playing the land that makes the 1-1 plant token, or I'm using the one drop that makes a clue token, and like different ways to get those in the play, and then sack it to get an Emrakul in play. And now those decks are better because you can find just the one Polymorph you need to win and counter magic back up. And you can, like, I think even decks like the one that's interesting, because this is a deck that classically is bad having a smaller hand size, but might be better, is Scapeshift decks, where it's like, I need a Scapeshift and I need ramp cards, but I kind of need a lot of cards in my hand. Mulliganing is bad. Now that I can target what I'm getting, does this deck get better? And there's a bunch of decks on the line that could fall either way of like, this is much better now because I can find my combo pieces, but I'm like Storm where I need as many cards as possible. So
we just have to really hope that we're not going to get to the Pro Tour and find that Dredge is just Eldrazi Winter and this was a bad decision.
They nuke Dredge out of the ground. Yeah. Like, I think if this Mulligan rule was great, except Dredge is just too good now, or Faithless Looting decks in general are too good now, or Goro's Vengeance is too good. You know, we can think of like 8 different decks we've mentioned that might get too good. We need to just ban it. Like, but every other deck is great. The meta game on day one looked tight. People were playing cool decks all over the place. These are Magic pros that know what they're doing, so they built these decks with a reason. It's just like Dredge was just better than everything else. Then you ban Conflagrate.
When is the Pro Tour? The Magic Championship?
It's in April. April 26th through 28th.
It is literally the same weekend as Endgame? That's what it is?
Yeah.
Ah.
Also, I realize...
Well, it's the same weekend as the pre-release.
Yeah, it's the same weekend as the pre-release. That's what I forgot. So big complaint is that it's in London, which is a very small Magic community, as far as partially because it's just like not a big physical place. Like, the UK is an island. And so by having the pre-release then, there's going to be so many people in all of London that go to that pre-release instead of playing at their local game stores. And pre-releases are the main way local game stores make money on Magic. And so it's like a probably the worst, not the worst because there are smaller communities that have Magic involved in them, but like this was a bad Mythic Championship to put it on a pre-release because it's in London.
Well, and like that, I mean, a similar experience, like I grew up and go to college in the Ohio Valley, and Columbus used to have a massive pre-release weekend every weekend. And so for the longest time, our local game stores didn't think of pre-releases as something that made them money.
Right.
Because everyone was just going to drive 3 hours to Columbus. If you're in Cincinnati or you're in Indianapolis, wherever you are, you're just going to go to Columbus because there's a massive convention center, massive like 1,500 person pre-release.
The pre-release in LA used to be by LAX, and just they ran out the Radisson, and just that's awesome. Where PDQs used to be, and it was great. But it was bad for local game stores, and I go back and forth on it. I do think that this is a little bit of a loss. Like if this was in Chicago, if this was a Mythic Championship Chicago, the Midwest would probably go to that, some of it, but a lot of people just still go to their local game store. Most kids would go to their local game store. But in London, where it's like there's a metro station that can get me to wherever this is, it's really hard.
And there's going to be artists there and all sorts of things that.
Yeah.
But back to the conversation with happens with the Pro Tour, with this mulligan rule, what's happening there? Yes, it's the same week as Endgame. But just see on Thursday night. I'm not seeing Avengers.
See it on Thursday night.
Yeah.
I'll have seen it.
We talked about this already, that you getting into a pre-screening for Avengers is the
I got into the last one. I'll get it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to see it Thursday night. I'll probably be dressed up.
I will spoil it for
probably
you.
Probably in a Star-Lord costume, because that's the only costume I have for the Avengers currently.
Hmm.
You know how hard it is to find a good Bucky costume? It's really hard.
You've looked.
I've looked. Hmm. Me and Whitney were going to do Captain America and the Winter Soldier that Halloween after Winter Soldier came out, and like could not find a Winter Soldier costume to save my
probably
life.
Probably easier now.
Yes, easier now.
You just need to reach out to the cosplay community.
I know. But that's... I don't have time. I wish I had time to make a cosplay. I would make a gender-bent like Kes cosplay tomorrow if I had the time to actually pull that off.
Well, in lieu of that, make a Geist of St. Tras.
That's harder. Most of Kes's costume is like a robe that's tatters on the bottom and like an armor chest plate.
You like have and the like extra robe in your trunk things. At all times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You like gave it to me at a Star Wars screening once.
Like that's an easy costume. Geist of St. Trapped is like religious ghost wear and a giant sword and like yeah. I even have Whole Foods has vodka a vodka brand that comes in little blue potion bottles. That's like exactly what Kes has like floating around her.
Oh, very cool.
Sweet.
So I have a question before we end the episode. At the next modern GP you go to, I guess it is now called a Mythic
Championship.
Championship? No.
No. Mythic Magic Fest?
They're still called Grand
Prix. The next Magic Fest.
Sure.
The next GP you play in at a Magic Fest.
Yeah.
Are you playing a Grand Architect deck now that the new Mulligan rule lets you play bad cards, or are you going to make day two again and play with a good deck?
I don't know. Honestly, I thought about this a lot. I really, really, really enjoyed playing Phoenix. I had a great time at that GP. It was a great Magic Fest period. It was fun to play well. It was embarrassing to play badly with the first game I had ever played with that deck.
So we haven't talked about this because I wasn't on last week's episode. In Ben's defense, he had not played that deck before that game. He literally...
I played an FNM the night before without thinging the ices.
In the deck the night before. The night before at the FNM was the first time he played the deck ever because he like put off actually deciding that he was actually going to do this until the last minute.
So it's not defense of missing triggers. Like, I made a ton of mistakes. I was happy I won. Well,
like,
but like, it was...
On camera is hard. On camera is a difficult... I'm defending you. Let me defend you.
All last week, Ben, you did think he was going to come here and drag you. So revel in... Alex's sparing praise.
The fact that he got to day two for the first time in his life in a modern GP because he played a good deck because I forced him to. That's my burying you in the ground. But on camera is super difficult. It is like pro players have talked about. It is the easiest place to make mistakes. Period. Like in a Magic tournament because it's so much pressure. You have lights on you. Cards are harder to see because lights are on you. Like it's just a harder thing to do. And then on top of that, first round at a GP, first round you ever playing the deck. Period. Like, you sat down and saw Thinking Ice in play for the first time in front of you on camera.
I was like, can I got to read this card?
Have you played with that card ever before?
Do you mind if I take it out of the sleeve and make sure I know what it does on the
backside? Like,
I'd, like, watch some people play it. Like, I was excited about it, but, like, I couldn't get him the night before.
And you still won. Like, yeah. Beyond all of that, and you won against Elves, which was the deck you drew against the last time you were on camera at a GP.
Good.
So, like, props. Good job. You made mistakes. People make mistakes. I make dumber mistakes every day playing Magic, and congratulations on making day two.
Thank you.
Now,
the answer to the question is I enjoyed it. It was really fun. I don't know what the next one, what I'll play. It's possible I'll play another good deck. That deck is totally my wheelhouse, so it felt really good to play it. I like coming up with my own ideas, and I've come up with some that are better than others. It's possible that I will continue to work on ideas, but not play something that is as off the wall. Like, mm-hmm. maybe take an established archetype and maybe try to tweak it a little bit so that it's like a little bit more my...
Add some spice.
Yes.
Yeah, and I sympathize with the spice adding.
Maybe. I don't know, though. Maybe I'll just play a good deck. I still enjoyed all throughout the day talking to listeners in the show, meeting the community, getting to play against decks that I don't get to play against that often. Like, real time getting to feel the nuances of Modern at a GP, which I don't get to do that often. Mm-hmm. I got a lot out of the experience that had not that much to do with the deck I was playing. It just had to do with the experience of being there and like playing a deck that was good.
Yeah.
It was like just a good pile of cards that when you draw your opening hand, you feel excited about.
Yeah.
It.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you got that many more chances now with the new mulligan rule to mulligan to Pili Pala Grand Architect. So.
Oh, God. There's a way
you didn't realize that.
I mean, you get every mulligan you get gives you 7 cards, and if 2 of them are Grand Architect and Pili Pala, and you can keep some lands, like ship the rest of that garbage.
The Grand Architect Pili Pala version with Collected Company is one that I've like messed around with in my head for a long time, because hitting both Grand Architect and Pili Pala end of turn off a Collected Company seems like just so possible.
Mm-hmm.
You'll just like luck sack the win sometimes. I've always been like almost there with that, but I've never quite gotten there, so. That does seem kind of good, right? I can see your face. Kind of. No? Okay.
You need a third card still.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
Zenith or something similar.
You have a choice of playing Grand Architect, Pili Pala, a card that doesn't do anything unless you're winning, and a random other card that you can use infinite mana for, or you can play any of the cards that were in Collected Company's decks.
I think right off the bat...
good and attack for 2 at least.
This will be my rant that I'll just go on really quickly before we finish, but I think right off the bat... This deck would also play Mirror Superior. You Architect casts Superior, right? If you're playing Hierarch to get a turn 2 Architect.
Is bad.
Hang on. If you're playing Hierarch to get a turn 2 Architect,
mm-hmm.
right? You can then chain that into a Superior. Mm-hmm. But you also have the ability now between Pili Pala, Hierarch, and Architect to have tons of mana producing creatures that can just cast the 5/6. So mm-hmm. it's a good card. And on top of that, you have Collected Company that can just get you a combo end of turn that can also hit your Superiors. So I think as long as you built the deck around that a little bit to have some just like I win moments,
I think that
it's not bad.
Collected Company would be bad in this deck. I think that if you wanted to do this deck, you want to go with more of a Trinket Mage situation that's finding the XX guy, that Walking Ballista, because that's actually the card you're going to use to win with. And every other card that you can think of you're going to win with is not as good as that card. And then also because Trinket Mage can tap for blue mana off the thing. But... this deck's bad.
I said Marshall's face was so much more excited for my version than your version.
I mean, I don't get me wrong. I do think Walking Ballista is one of the logical spouts to use your Pili Pala.
Sweeter card.
Your Pili Pala. But also, I'm still hoping one of these days we're going to be able to have a... what's the Trinket Survival of the Fittest? Artificer's Intuition.
Yeah, huge fan of that one.
I have a Highlander roulette wheel that has it in it. Sweet.
All right, guys. I think that's going to wrap us up for the day.
One last thing. Thanks, everyone, who came say hi to me. I didn't do the Magic Fest episode that you did with Michael because I was not in town, so
yeah.
I'm going to shout out people. Thank you, everyone that came by, said hi. Thanks, everyone that I got to hang out with. Jared, I think the other day, or someone from Wizards posted like, what are your favorite Magic moments? And I honestly think Magic LA, the last one, that Magic Fest LA, was one of the best Magic moments of my entire Magic career. It was great. I had a great time.
Agree completely. It was a wonderful experience.
Thanks everyone that came to the
meetup. Yeah, we had a great meetup.
Yeah,
it was super great. And thank you to everybody for saying hi as well. That's like one of my favorite parts about going to these things.
Yep.
So, all right, guys, we'll be back same time, same place next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you for your attention. See you later, alligator.
This has been a production of Time Traveler Media, sending podcasts into the future.